Today is Thursday, February the 18th, 2016. We're going to hear Reb Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Tetzaveh.
Nice to see all of you guys. So I'd like to take a minute and I'd like to mention that if you have a cell phone, I'd appreciate it if you could lower it down. I'd like to take a minute and thank those generous people who, on a regular basis, bring things to help the class continue, and to plates and all kinds of other things. I think maybe next week, maybe we'll be able to even have some real hot food because somebody brought some Sterno today, which is very nice. So I'd like to thank this wonderful synagogue for allowing us to have our class here. I'd like to thank those who helped to set up, those who get the class tables ready for us, and the rabbi for being so generous and kind. In case you don't know it, we're Milchik. And next week, do we have class, Reb Moshe?
Huh?
Next week?
Next week,
are you planning on being here?
Yeah, there's no reason why next week.
Right,
yeah.
Good. Okay, so we'll be Fleishik next week. We're going to be davening Marav a few minutes after class, 3 minutes after. So we'll need everybody's help. So please make sure that we have a minyan before you leave. And
welcome to everybody, of course, and especially Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik is feeling a little bit under the weather. Everybody should please have a little forbearance. If he decides to abbreviate the class somewhat, if he has trouble speaking.
Okay.
Rabbi Soloveitchik, you have our permission.
Okay.
Not that we want you to.
I won't discuss any deep topics. I'll discuss a very simple question that's asked by the commentators, and that is that from the point Moshe Rabbeinu gets on the scene in Parshas Shmos until Chumash Dvarim, there is no Sedra that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, except for this one. And the question is, why is it that in this Sedra, his name is not mentioned? Now, it's the Vilna Gaon gives an answer that's somewhat a little strange, but his answer is because this Sedra is associated. This Sedra is associated usually associated with Zayin Adar. And Zayin Adar, we know, is both the birthday as well as the yard site of Moshe Rabbeinu. So in a sense, Moshe Rabbeinu, disappears from the scene. So because of that, his name is not mentioned. Okay, let's take this out of Chumash a second. Now, First, I just want to discuss some of the difficulties I have with what the Vilna Gaon said, and that is who created the Sedros. The Sedros were created by Ezra. Now, so if the question is, what does the Vilna Gaon mean? Does the Vilna Gaon mean that because this is the date that Ezra divided up the Torah in such a way that some parshios that for whatever reason don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu, should he use those parshios to be the sedra of Zayin Adar? Or is it the reverse? In other words, he's not telling us why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. It's telling us why the sedra was formed at this time, in this way. But the question then still rises, why is it that you have so many parshios in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned? Okay, so we can understand why Ezra, in selecting where the different sedros are going to be, use this sedra fashion parshas tzav in such a manner that almost always it will fall out in a week connected or related to Zayin Adar. But the question still remains: you have so many parshios in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. So that question still remains. Or we could suggest that, in a sense, that's one question that has to be asked. Now, there is another answer given, I think, by the Baal HaTorah. They say that Moshe Rabbeinu, because he refused, he said Mechenina Mesifcha Sherka Safta. He said to God that to erase him from the book, or also because some say because he said to when Moshe Rabbeinu was asked to go to Paro, he hesitated to go to Paro, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu got upset with him, and because of that he lost the kahuna. He lost, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu should have been the Kohen Gadol also. Moshe Rabbeinu should have been the Kohen Gadol, but because he refused to go to Paro, so Aaron became the successor. Now, what's the Mida Keneged Mida? I think it's very obvious. In other words, what did God offer Moshe Rabbeinu? He offered Moshe Rabbeinu the role of being his agent in going, not just to Paro, by the way, but in going to the Jewish people. Because the Jewish people had to had to be had to redeem themselves also. Dabir al Palro Melech Mitzrayim Vel Bnei Yisrael Lahotzias Bnei Yisrael Mimeretz Mitzrayim. It's not just the Paro who had to redeem the Jewish people. It was the Jewish people who had to redeem the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not know. He said, "What schus? What merit do the Jewish people have to be redeemed?" And he said, "The Jewish people won't listen to me, and Paro won't listen to me." So, because he objected, because of this, he was punished that he didn't get the kahuna, he didn't get the kahuna gdola. Now, we have to understand. So we can understand the midah keneged midah here very simply, because what is the kohen? What is the kohen gadol? The kohen gadol is an agent. He's God's agent to the Jewish people, and more than that, he's the Jewish people's agent. The Gemara has a shaila whether the kohenim ashlucha rachmana Shlucha the Israel, whether they're the agents of the Jewish people, but that's in a different perspective. But the Kohen Gadol was the agent. First of all, the Urim V'Tumim was the message, in a sense, the message that God was giving to the Jewish people, and that was through the Kohen Gadol that message was given. So the Kohen Gadol was God's agent to the Jewish people, and he was also the Jewish people's agent to God. He is the one that on Yom Kippur he would go and say the vidui. He would do all the avoda. He is the one that brought the atonement for the Jewish people. And when you bring atonement for the Jewish people, when you help someone get atonement, when you help somebody do tshuva, you have to have confidence in them. You have to believe that they can change. And if one doesn't believe that they can change, then he's not the one to help them change. There is a my uncle would say in the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, he would say one of the basic beliefs is we have to believe in the coming of Mashiach. We have to believe in the coming of Mashiach. On the other hand, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva paskins, Ein Yisrael Nigalin El B'Tshuva. The Jewish people are not going to be redeemed except through Tshuva. So how could we on one hand say, and not only are you required to believe that the Jewish people are going to be redeemed by Mashiach, you have to look forward to Mashiach coming in any moment. I'm no Lubavitcher Chassid. You have to look forward. It doesn't mean that you need some kind of cell phone or a system that Mashiach comes, they'll signal you, as some people were doing for a while in Crown Heights. Let me tell you something, those that were operating that service made good profit. Anyway, so they didn't have to hire anybody. Anyway, so but what it means is that you have to look forward to Mashiach coming at any moment. Achakelo b'chol yom sheyavo. Achakelo, I look forward to his coming. I don't know if he's going to come tomorrow. I have to believe that he will come. But as far as tomorrow or today is concerned, I have to look forward to the possibilities coming. And the only way I can look forward to the possibility that he's coming is by believing that he could come. So on one hand, you have to believe that the Jewish people, that the Jewish people could do tshuva. Because the Rambam says that Ein Yisrael Negolin El B'Tshuva, the Jewish people have not been redeemed except with tshuva. But on the other hand, the Rambam says that you have to believe that Mashiach is going to come, and you have to be aware that he might come tomorrow. Now, how could those two things come together? You see how far, unfortunately, our people are from reaching the level of tshuva that's probably necessary. Now, I want you to know, you know, I'm not the oldest in the room here, but I'm not the youngest either. Okay, so, but just in my lifetime, 50 years ago, more than that, but 50 years ago, who would have believed in the fall of the Soviet Union? Who would have believed it? I think we were more likely to believe in the fall of the United States than we would have believed in the fall of the Soviet Union. So it's important to know on a historical level that things that today seem impossible, tomorrow becomes a reality, and the day afterwards, no one looks back and wonders, how did it happen? I don't have to talk about the about all kinds of other things. Who would have believed it? You have good things and you have bad things. You have catastrophes. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't individuals that had some inkling about the Holocaust. But millions upon millions of Jews stayed in Europe. Why did they stay in Europe? Because all of them came in hunger, no way. It didn't dawn on them. Yeah, they had pogroms. But for 2,000 years, the Jewish people survived pogroms. They figured we'll survive again. So history changes and it's moving much quicker than ever before. That's important to know when we do this. But here's the question. The question is, how can we believe that Mashiach might come tomorrow when it's dependent upon tshuva? And my uncle said a very interesting thing. He said that belief in the coming of Mashiach is grounded in the belief of the Jewish people. In other words, we have to believe that the Jewish people could do tshuva tomorrow. And this was the problem. In other words, that starts with us. First, we have to believe that we could do it. We individuals, I can do tshuva. And then we have to believe that everybody else can do tshuva. And really, that was the job of the Kohen. The Kohen's job was to bring about kapara for the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu, because he first of all, he said, "Who am I?" Modesty, but there is a time and a place for modesty. But at the same time, he said, in what merits are the Jewish people going to be redeemed? And sometimes we don't know what the merits are, but we have to believe that the Jewish people can obtain those merits. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu lost the kahuna. And this sedra, which speaks about the kahuna, so in a sense he's not mentioned now. But it's all this is very peculiar. First of all, Moshe is mentioned, not by name, but Moshe is mentioned. You. There's certainly references to Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the significance of the name of Moshe? And we have to understand, what is the difference between Moshe and Aaron? What's the difference? Now, of course, Moshe, lo kam bi Yisrael kamoshe. Aaron was not on the level of Moshe. Even though Chazal say that Moshe and Aaron were shkulim, they were equal. So they were equal in certain tasks. Certainly not in terms of the giving of the Torah. They perhaps played a role equally in taking the Jewish people out of Egypt. But there certainly was a difference between Moshe and Aaron. But what's the difference in terms from a halachic perspective? What did the kuhuna represented that Moshe Rabbeinu, now Moshe Rabbeinu was a melech, was a king, but he wasn't the king because he was appointed king. It was because he was Moshe that he was king. Moshe Rabbeinu had a din of Sanhedrin. It's because, as I always tell everybody, it's not that he was like Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin acted in place of Moshe. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was a person. His greatness emanated from who he was. Now, Aaron was very great also. But his position as Kohen Gadol, it was a position, it was an office. And that's why there is a need for all of these clothes that the Sedra talks about. L'chavod l'sefaris, in other words, to give him glory. Now we could perhaps go into what was the purpose of it. There are three opinions. Some say it was for the Jewish people to have reverence to him. Now the truth of the matter is, the question is, why did Aaron need it and Moshe didn't need it? And I think the answer is very simple. What the Kohen Gadol was a job that was given over. The high priesthood was something that was given over from generation to generation. After Aaron, it was Elazar. After Elazar, it was Pinchas. It was something that was given over from generation to generation. When we deal with the early generations, we're dealing with great Kohanim Tolim. When you deal with the second base of Mikdash, and even some in the first base of Mikdash, the standards went down, to put it mildly. The standards went down. Where do you need clothes? Where do you need special uniforms? Where do you need a special uniform? You need a special uniform where the greatness emanates from the position. Now, Aaron got the position because of his personal greatness. But he set the precedent for future generations. Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why very often when the Torah tells us about the avoda that the Kohen Gadol is going to do, or not even the Kohen Gadol, sometimes a regular Kohen, it says, "And Aaron shall do." Aaron shall do. When it talks about Moshe doing, it's only Moshe that does it. Certain Xeris HaKosovs, we say Sanhedrin also, but in the simple pshat of the Pasuk, the simple words of the Pasuk, when the Torah talks very often about Aaron shall do this, it's not just Aaron, it's the future generations. And that's sometimes not even just all the future Kohanim Dolim. In other words, in a certain sense, the future generations of the Kohen Gadol, in a sense, they become Aaron. They become Aaron. This is
this is the idea behind the Kahuna Gdola is not just that I get the same position, but by getting the same position, I become, and I'm a lady, but by getting the same position, I become Aaron. And that's something that no one becomes, Moshe. No one becomes Moshe. So, first of all, because in a sense, there is no real position. The next Melech, Yoshua had a din of Melech, and also it was a different type of Malchus. It wasn't the position of Malchus. He had a din of a Melech. Shaul was the first Melech, was the first king. Shaul was really the first king. Moshe and Yoshua had to be treated as kings. But Shaul was the first king. In terms of position. Okay, there was no successor to Shaul for whatever reason. But ultimately, Malchus, the kingship is established through David. So there is a position. So in other words, where there is a position, so it's by the Kahuna Gdola, not in every position, but by the position of being the high Kohen. I don't want to use the word high priest. So I don't want to use the high priest. I don't want anybody to make a mistake. Anyway, but the high Kohen. When a person gets it, so by virtue of the position, he is considered like Aaron in certain areas. He's considered like Aaron. That's why, to demonstrate that difference, in this week's Sedra, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. Because, in other words, it's trying to tell us the implications of the position of Kahuna Gdola, that the getting the position of Kahuna Gdola, that in a sense makes the person like Aaron. So that's what it is. Now, and so I think. That's the real reason why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, and also that Moshe's name is not mentioned, but Aaron's name of course is mentioned all over. And it's to show that difference between what happens to Moshe and what happens to Aaron. Now, in terms of the clothes that were worn, so some say that the purpose of the clothes that Aaron wore, it says Lechavad Lusafaris. Now, for glory and the Pharisees, huh? Okay, no, but the Malbu, okay, I followed their translation. Okay. They say glory and
Yeah, but your father.
My father said honor. I know. My father said honor. That's true. My father said that the word kavod, if I recall correctly, Rabbi Berger was at the shir. I don't remember it as well. So I think my father said that the kavod, what came, the word kavod is related to the word kavod of yoke. Heaviness, it comes from the assuming of the burden of the responsibility, the kavod. But I don't remember what my father said about Teferis, but I have my own explanation about what Teferis is. And it could be, you know, sometimes
I might have heard it from my father. It was many years ago, and I begin to think maybe it's my own. I don't know. Anyway, but the question is, what is Tiferes? I'm not into Kabbalah, but the Tiferes, the Yaakov is the symbol of Tiferes. Avraham is the symbol of Chesed. Did my father say that? No, I don't know. Avraham is the symbol of Chesed.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yes,
all right.
That was part of the show.
Okay. Avraham is, sorry, it could be I heard it from my father. Okay. I was getting very proud. Anyway, so Avraham was the symbol of Chesed. Yitzchak is Yira, is fear. Now, there's a difference between Chesed is one who's outgoing in Kabbalah. Is one who is outgoing. You mix with people. Dusha, Tahara, whatever it is, that's on the contrary. That's withdrawal. Avraham is a very outgoing personality. He stands Pesach Oel. He deals with people. Yitzchak sometimes leaves the Oel, but for the most part, he's a withdrawn personality. He's a withdrawn personality. And I guess, when I think about it, I'll give you an example. My great-grandfather, Reb Chaim, my father told me he was the biggest extrovert there was. He would play with he was probably the Gadol Hador, and he would play with the little children. He would get down on all four, and they would ride on him like he was a horse. And they once tied him to the pole near the shul. And my uncle told over this story. This story I didn't hear from my father. They tied him to a pole near the shul. And the shamash came to the shul. And he saw Reb Chaim tied to the pole near the shul. So he wanted to untie me. He ran over. He said, "No, you have to get the children to untie me because they might feel bad that the horse ran away." He mixed with everybody. With his talmidim, he acted like he was one with them. He said, but let's say the Reb Chaim's son, my great uncle, the Brisker Rav, he was almost the opposite way. It was hard to get in to talk to him. Not everybody could get in to talk to him. People told me that people stopped talking to him and he was not too happy. So either he would make believe that he was sleeping or he fell asleep, whatever it was. Rightfully so, he didn't trust anybody. He said he never opened up his mouth if there was a newspaper man in the room. He was very, very withdrawn. He was a very withdrawn personality. But ideally,
and you have somebody in your family.
Oh, you have lots of people. That was the difference between the Avraham personality and the Yitzchak personality. The Avraham personality is the outgoing personality. That's the man of Chesed. Yitzchak represents fear of God. He was the Ola Tmima. Matter of fact, if you take a look in the Torah, there's almost nothing mentioned about Yitzchak. Almost nothing. After the Akedah, he takes over. A couple things about a couple wells. And then after that, it's all with Yaakov and Esav. Almost nothing. I don't believe nothing happened in Yitzchak's life. But that was Yitzchak's personality. And the Torah wanted Yitzchak's personality as a withdrawn personality. Because he was the symbol of Kedusha.
the symbol of holiness. It was a symbol of holiness. And holiness is something that's hidden. Now, my father would always say, that which is valuable, we hide. The concept of tznius is not, and my father would say, it's not that because we're anti-body, but on the contrary, because we value the body. The things that are expensive, you don't show off, not that there aren't mishagayim that do it, but you don't show off in public. So there is these two forms. The Yaakov represents Tiferes, according to Kabbalah. He's emergence between the outgoing personality. He's considered emergence of these two mitos. And to a certain degree, I don't remember which Tana it is, but the Gemara says that when a certain Tana died, this, by the way, was when my father gave a hesped on Rav Huttner, who was my father's teacher when he was a young fellow, and Rabbi Berger's Rebbe also. And so my father said about Rav Huttner, he mentioned this Gemara. The Gemara says that one said that Rebbe is Kegal Galchama. When Rebbe died, they compared him like to the sun in its celestial sphere. And the other one said that Rebbe is like the dew on the earth. My father said, what's the idea? He says, we benefit all from the sun, but the sun we benefit because it's far away. The dew on the earth, that's something that we benefit because it's down here where we are. He says, certain people have that skill, that ability, that they can be both. They can be the dew of the earth and the Galgal Chama. There is this sense of reverence that's associated with withdrawal. At the same time, there is the sense of closeness. The sense of closeness. I think, apparently that's what my father said, this is the idea of Tiferes. The idea of Tiferes is that the Kohen Gadol, Aaron, was the person that made Shalom his whole life. Aaron represented Shalom, Moshe represented Emes. But once Aaron became the Kohen Gadol, in a sense, he had to take these two midos and put them together. He had to take the two midos and put them together. And the midos of, on one hand, being close with the Jewish people. He was the representative of the Jewish people. And at the same time, people have to learn from the Kohen Gadol. And sometimes it's difficult to learn from somebody when you're one among them. So the Kohen Gadol had to have this idea, L'chavon L'seferes. Now, there's a discussion, what was the purpose of these clothes? Was the purpose of the clothes for the Kohen Gadol? Was the purpose of the clothes for the Jewish people? And that is a third shot, that the purpose of the clothes was to give tferes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But let's deal with the first two pshatim. I think the idea is, in the first two pshatim, sometimes the Kohen Gadol, someone like Aaron, he was a person who was involved with the people as individuals. He was like one of them. But for him to do his job successfully as the Kohen Gadol, because once he became Kohen Gadol, he became the symbol of Kedusha. Sanctity is something that has to be hidden, not exposed. Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, I don't want me to contradict the Pope, but Yerushalayim has walls around it. Why? Yerushalayim needed to have walls because that was sanctity. Walls, Jerusalem had walls to enclose. Not so much to keep out, but to enclose. And just as a side comment, I want to mention that my understanding of the message of the Pope is Christians don't make walls. Well, I'm not sure what he has reference to, because I know that throughout generations and generations there were ghettos for the Jews that were not made by the Jews. So that's the first thing. The second thing I want to make mention of is that when he says Christians don't make walls, I believe, and I might be wrong, that the implication is because, you know, after terrorist attack, that no one came to the defense of Israel, and the answer from the Vatican was always, we hope that the cycle of violence will not expand, meaning that the Jews won't defend themselves. So Israel finally built a wall. So the implication is Trump will make a good Jew. That's what they meant to say. Now, all right, anyway, so.
He has a Jewish daughter,
but I just want you to know how I read the statement. Okay. So I'm no fan of Trump either. I think Trump will make a wall between him and the rest of the world. Okay, but in any case, so in other words, Dusha has to be hidden. So in other words, the Kohen Gadol, on one hand, he's a man of the people. He's the representative of the people. He represents the people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But on the other hand, he represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the people. And being the representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's the symbol of sanctity. So he has to combine these two things. And that's what Tiferes is. According to Kabbalah, Tiferes is both the withdrawal and the coming close at the same time. Chesed, the Nemes, Chesed and Yira, they're both, we're going back and forth. And because that is what Tiferes is according to Kabbalah. And the Kohen Gadol, especially Aaron, who naturally was someone who mixed with people, he had to, in a sense, combine the idea of chesed, of the milas chesed, of making shalom, together with this idea of being the representative, being the symbol of Dusha.
Shkar. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay,
Tom. I'm going to please clean off the tables, leave the tablecloths on. We're going to be davening Marav. We could use your help.